Love is what makes the whole world go round. God created the universe out of love. St. John, in his first epistle, tells us that God is love. And since we are made to the image and likeness of God, therefore, each one of us has been created primarily to love. All of life consists of three basic relationships of love: love of God, love of others, and love of self. Yet, many people are afraid to love, afraid of what it might cost them to get involved in love for another. Therefore, the number one enemy of transparency of love is fear. In order to love, we have to overcome this fear of love. And that means we must have such a high estimation of love to be willing to pay the price of love. And the first price of love is transparency. Frequently, the reason we have refused to love is because we are so timid and so full of fear that we keep the doors of our soul locked and barred. It is necessary that we develop an openness in our personality toward the personalities of others, and this is called transparency. We must be willing to let other people into our own space, to let them see the depths of our being. And this means we must be willing to expose the sensitive areas of our personality to others and take the chance of being hurt by them, of being taken advantage of by them, and particularly of being rejected when we go out and make an offer of ourselves to love. And so, to be transparent means to put ourselves in an exposed position so that others are able to cause great pain to us. However, without such transparency, love is impossible. The encounter of love is one that can never be forced. This is even true of our love for God. God is most careful in observing this freedom, never forcing his love upon us, nor forcing us to love him. We can only woo love. The moment we begin to exert pressure, we lose love. We can beg for love, but we never force it. In such wooing, we cast aside the protective armor that we have placed around the sanctuary of our own person, and we become sensitive and vulnerable. But once we have experienced the delights of love, we are therefore more willing to take such chances. However, there are some who go through their whole life without ever finding the courage to open their being and their person to love. And it is very difficult to break through such hard armor. And so we frequently find a person who is all alone, with no one as a friend. If such a person does not find a friend, he or she will begin to doubt even their own value, imagining that they lack goodness and truth. And this in turn causes depression, suffering, and inferiority complex. It is the task of each one of us to try to give love to such lonely people when it is so desperately needed. It is not a matter of telling them that this is their cross and they must suffer it. It's rather a matter of our opening our own person in transparency toward that other person, even when that love is spurned again and again. So often the rejection is not their fault, but simply because they don't know how to love or they don't trust us. Perhaps they have been disappointed so often in the past that they need to test and to prove our offer of love again and again. The capacity for transparency is necessary for all encounters of love, whether it be with God, or with a person of the opposite sex in marriage, or with another person, either of the same sex or another in friendship. To develop this capacity for transparency, we need to overcome our selfish attitudes. We need also to develop our emotions. We need the ability to express spiritual things by our bodily gesture, hands and face and eyes. We need also to have patience and trust. We need simplicity and a willingness to open our souls and expose our emotions, even when there is danger of our being hurt. In the first chapters of the book of Genesis, we are told that God said, after he had created Adam, it is not good for man to be alone. In other words, we have been created to be in a dialogue of love with others. One reaches maturity only when there has been a number of personal encounters of love with other people. It is only in love that a human being reaches wholeness and maturity. By love, one's whole personality is activated. Without this facility for love, one's whole being is put into a straitjacket, lacking freedom and lacking life. We see then how important is this third task of individuation, what might be called the I-thou relationships, the relationships of love between individuals, whether it be a man and woman, two men, or two women. One is capable of such mature I-thou relationships only after successfully completing the previous task of self-control. Only after centering one's life in one's inner self, and only after the commitment of oneself to some higher cause. This is the ideal way by which we prepare ourselves for these I-thou relationships of love. For this reason, a really mature adult relationship of love usually does not develop until, let's say, after the age of 30 or even 40. Sometimes, but not necessarily, such mature relationships of love occur with those with whom we have established youthful relationship. Thus, serious problems of relationship develop for married people if they have not developed this maturity, these first steps of individuation. Very blessed indeed are those middle-aged couples who are able to find the fullness of the I-thou relationship of love after the children are grown and their economic problems are more or less resolved. Having learned to confide in God, one is now more capable of being able to confide in another human being. There is always the risk of our love being rejected or abused when we make this offer, this gift of ourselves to another. And yet, this price of transparency is the price that we must pay, the chance that we must take if we ever hope to arrive at maturity. Through the experience of human love given and received, the repressed areas of our unconscious will be discovered and developed. When these relationships are with persons of the other sex, the most observable development will be a good balance between masculinity and femininity. If we choose not to make the sacrifice of ourselves in love to another human being, then ordinarily our progress in maturity comes to a stop. We begin to regress into some form of childishness or spiritual sterility. And so, despite the risks involved in the I-thou relationships and commitments, no one can hope to reach full maturity on earth without the willingness and the readiness to give oneself in love to other individuals. If the adult person fails to confide himself or herself in love to another, there is usually a serious regression into mediocrity. One becomes prematurely old, barren, dry, hard and brittle, sour and bitter toward life. Some lose hope and withdraw into a shell and cut themselves off from society. Most of all, the vital energies of growth come to a halt. Idiosyncrasies that used to be funny when they were younger now grow like cancer until they become a source of irritation to everyone. The person who does not love finds usually a greater and greater conservatism and fear of change taking over. A general negativism, pessimism, and resentment toward others. Such a person often spends one's time criticizing and blaming others for all that is wrong in the world, blaming everyone but the real culprit, namely one's own refusal to become transparent and to give oneself in love to others, to be open, to run the risk, pay the price that is involved in such I-thou encounters of love. On the other hand, the adult who is able to give oneself an unselfish love to others experiences a beautiful growth in character. One will now discover many new powers never previously experienced. For example, tenderness and sympathy, a willingness to change and adjust to others and to new situations. Being open to others through love opens one to many worthwhile values. God, truth, beauty, religion, the future. Instead of discouragement and pessimism, optimism and hope takes over. Enthusiasm, creativity, both physical and psychic energy increase. We might say that by means of this third task of individuation, we discover the fountain of youth, for which the human race has been searching from time immemorial. There is a most intimate connection between one's natural capacity for love with other human beings and one's capacity for love of God. Religion is primarily a loving encounter between the person of God and our person. Unless we have worked hard to develop the natural capacity for love in our personality, we will usually be incapable of entering into a loving union with God. We could say that natural love loosens the soil of the soul and makes it soft and pliable to the action of God through grace. Natural love cultivates our energies of enthusiasm and gives us the vitality needed for the heroic practice of religious faith in God. Therefore, natural love is a very good preparation for our religious surrender to God. If love is an active force in our life, our whole being will be radiant with health, both physical and spiritual and psychological, emotional health, and thus will be the perfect foundation for the heroic practice of what is called agapic love, that total, perfect love of God and neighbor. Love and religion have the same mortal enemy, namely egotism or self-love. Both have the same goal, the redemption, from the isolation of the ego. Therefore, without a high capacity for natural love, our religion soon becomes cold and hard and numb without feeling or emotion. Therefore, those persons who complain that their prayer life with God is cold and full of distractions are often the very persons who have never learned to love another human being according to the full capacity of their personality. Without the ability and the opportunity to practice natural love, our religious practices usually become dull, weary, and lacking in life and energy. On the other hand, natural love without religion can degenerate into something vulgar. Natural love alone contains the seeds of death unless it has the assistance of divine love. Natural love ordinarily blooms and then fades and dies unless sustained by grace from God. It is important, therefore, that we do not exaggerate the importance of natural love. It is only one of the necessary elements of life. It is not everything. By itself, natural love is often blind, imagining that it sees values when there are not present in reality. And so natural love needs the help, especially of God's grace. If uncontrolled, it can be a hindrance to maturity. And to reach wholeness, heroic efforts must be made to redeem natural love from the many pitfalls that surround it. Otherwise, the force of natural love is so great that it can overpower our whole being and carry into destruction not only itself but the other faculties of our soul. Besides this self-discipline, there is also necessary a very scrupulous honesty with oneself. If therefore we have progressed satisfactorily in the authenticity of the ego and in discovering our significance before God, we will be better able to cope with the problems of transparency and love. Love is never easy. It requires tremendous work and effort on our part, but it is the necessary price for maturity, the necessary foundation for life and for sanctity, for wholeness, for everything worthwhile. To attain a true and lasting I-Thou encounter of love, it is necessary that both parties have accomplished the task of authenticity of their ego. In addition, there should be compatibility in the following areas. First of all, agreement on the ultimate questions in life. Secondly, more or less the same level of intellectual and cultural values. And thirdly, the same level of emotional life and stability. It is impossible for us to have personal encounters of love with every human being. We are, of course, obliged to love everyone in the sense of our willingness and desire to help them be happy and attain the fulfillment of their proper goals in life. But the love of friendship, the I-Thou encounter, is reserved for only a few persons in the course of our life. The amount of time and energy and psychic effort required for each encounter of love is so great that we are very limited in the amount of friendships, close, intimate friendships, that we are capable of attaining in the course of our life. So, ideally, the first of these should have been with our father and mother. We can never be grateful enough to God for each experience of a good I-Thou encounter of love that has been given to us. Without such friends, we could not attain a maturity and wholeness. It is impossible to actualize our person except through encounters of love with others. We are unable ordinarily to rise to an encounter of love with God unless we have had the experience of loving encounters with human beings. Love is never something you can learn in books. It is not contained in a definition. It can only be learned through first-hand experience. Not only does natural love help religion, but the encounter of love with God through grace transforms all of our other loving relationships. And so, as a result of our experiences of significance, of love between God and ourselves, human love takes on a new meaning. We will now be able to have better and more fruitful, more enjoyable friendships with other human beings. And so every love experience, whether it be with God or a human being, increases our capacity for love at all levels. Every friendship we have influences profoundly our whole life, all for good. Now, there are several kinds of natural love, but the most important is the love with the opposite sex, between man and woman. For the full maturity of an individual, it is necessary that one have experiences of friendship with the other sex. Such experiences do not necessarily entail sexual experience. Nevertheless, there is no such thing as a purely platonic friendship. In every real friendship that involves a man and woman, sex will be present as a basic current, either consciously or unconsciously. However, this is not necessarily wrong, as long as there is a good and honest reason for the friendship and the persons involved observe the proper safeguards. With the proper precautions, sex gives life and impetus to the whole structure of natural love. This impetus in turn gives vitality to our religion and to the soul's striving for union with God. After the age of 35, the absence of friendships with the opposite sex frequently results in an increasingly serious loss of vitality in one's whole personality. This in turn will adversely affect one's relationship with God. And so we see here the providence of God in the lives of many saints who were provided with a close friend of the opposite sex to help them in their climb towards sanctity. People need to realize that there is a distinction between love and sex. Young people especially must be shown that if sex is indulged in, then eros, or love, will be dragged down into the mud. And so young people especially must learn to develop and enjoy love without the physical expression of sex. Such requires great self-control. The instinct of sex needs to be transformed into a higher form of love. This is not a question of killing the instinct of sex. The energy it generates can be the dynamo to keep alive the fires of natural love and even the love of God. And so with good habits of self-discipline and self-control, and with the help of the grace of God, which is available to everyone, one is able to live with this instinct of sex without killing it. Much effort will be involved, but great advances in maturity and the ability to love will result. However, if the instinct for sex is totally repressed and ignored, it does not disappear, but simply retreats into the unconscious, where it continues to haunt the soul with all kinds of neuroses. If we obstruct this instinct of sex, it will be like stopping up a fresh spring in a field. The water continues to flow, but it undermines the whole field and leaves it an impossible marsh. And so a proper outlet must be found in the form of spiritual love. If so, then the energy behind the sex instinct can add value to one's whole life. And we must remember that after adolescence, sex will always be present as a basic current in everyone's life, whether married or single, either consciously or unconsciously. But the more conscious one becomes of this sex energy, the easier it will be to handle and control, and the less danger of it undermining and ruining the whole of life. It is impossible totally to obstruct the sex drive. Therefore, it must be integrated into the rest of life and used either directly in marriage or indirectly through spiritual love. And what do we mean by spiritual love? It means loving other people the way Jesus Christ loved them. And we call that agapic love. It's a love that is willing to go out and to sacrifice oneself for others, and the willingness even to die out of love for that other person, based primarily because God has that kind of love for us. In order to be able to help both ourselves and others when we or they have the experience of falling in love with another human being, it is necessary to know something about the problem of projection. When one falls in love with another human being, actually one is falling in love not with the actual reality of the other person, but with the projection of one's own anima or animus upon the person who somewhat resembles our anima or animus. Unless one is experienced, one imagines that what is seen is the reality of the other person and not a vision of their possibilities. Never will the reality measure up to the ideal that we have. It is the task of a lifetime of effort on the part of both partners to attain even an approximation of the ideal that is seen in the other person when one first falls in love. In this sense, Eros, this natural love that one has for a person of the other sex, is actually blind, and it cannot be totally trusted. As long as the aurora of fascination and attraction continues, it is impossible to establish a deep personal relationship of agapic love with that other person. And so marriage at such a time should be out of the question. We must not tell the young people that they are loving only a projection, but use the language of poetry and fairy tales to explain to them what is required, to tell them that they need to take a long journey through a forest to reach a castle where they will find the beloved. And there are many dangers in the forest, and they must take care not to drink or eat while on this journey, not to taste of sex at this time, because this would be poison and love would die. They must go through a circle of fire of suffering to reach the castle where their beloved is. Only thus can they ever hope to have a permanent union with their beloved. This is the end of the conference on the transparency of love.